coming up on golf today, the PGA Tour just says no, denying waivers for the inaugural LIV Golf event outside London next month. But LIV Golf CEO Greg Norman says he will press on. We'll have reaction and all the latest news in this unfolding story. And we get a visit from Rolex number one Jin Young Ko ahead of her title defense at the Founders Cup, talking rivalries, her goals, her motivations, and her favorite pastimes off the course. And you will hear from another world number one, Masters champ, Dallas native Scottie Scheffler. After an incredible start to 2022, what can he possibly do for an encore in his backyard? We got lots to chew on. Settle in. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Breaking news yesterday as the PGA Tour has denied its members conflicting event releases to play in the first LIV Golf Invitational Series event, which is scheduled to be contested in June outside of London. The PGA Tour released a memo to all its members saying, quote, "Dear PGA Tour member, I would like to share the PGA Tour's decision regarding conflicting event and media release requests for the Saudi Golf League's event to be played in London during the week of the RBC Canadian Open. We have notified those who have applied that their request has been declined in accordance with the PGA Tour tournament regulations. As such, tour members are not authorized to participate in the Saudi Golf League's London event under our regulations. As a membership organization, we believe this decision is in the best interest of the PGA Tour and its players." In this statement from Greg Norman, the CEO and commissioner of LIV Golf, sadly, the PGA Tour seems intent on denying professional golfers their right to play golf, unless it's exclusively in a PGA Tour tournament. This is particularly disappointing in light of the tour's nonprofit status, where its mission is purportedly to promote the common interest of professional tournament golfers. Instead, the tour is intent on perpetuating its illegal monopoly of what should be a free and open market. The tour's action is anti-golfer, anti-fan, and anti-competitive. But no matter what obstacles the PGA Tour puts in our way, we will not be stopped. We will continue to give players options that promote the great game of golf globally. Welcome inside our studio. It is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch at a bit of a curveball on Tuesday. The thought was the PGA Tour might grant these releases to an overseas event. Why did this not happen in that form?
Well, I think it comes down to, we all knew the red line was going to be drawn somewhere. I think there was an assumption in the game, certainly it was an assumption that I subscribed to, that the line would be drawn with the Portland event, the first Saudi event in the US, which is several weeks hence after the London event. But clearly the legal fight, as one player said to me earlier, the legal fight has been moved up by several weeks. The line was always going to be drawn. Jay Monahan and the tour have chosen to draw the line now. Now we see if players actually want to cross that line. And, you know, they're free to make that choice, but now there are consequences to that choice because the flirting can no longer go on in the shadows. Players who want to make the choice now have to make that choice in the open.
Do you think that news yesterday changes minds? That players who maybe were on the fence that were considering it will now say, I'm not even going to go down that road?
I suspect it'll diminish the field in London some, because one thing that's become very apparent over the last couple of years as this story has rumbled on, Damon, is how few players have the stomach for any kind of public stance on this. That's why, and I would argue the tour has enabled them by not releasing the list of players who have ever asked for releases to go play Saudi events. And these guys have been able to do that quietly without ever nailing their colours to the mast, as it were, and that isn't an option for them now anymore. There are guys who don't have the stomach for the battle that it would entail, and they're probably going to stay home and wait to see if somebody else steps up, because ultimately, if somebody who is a PGA Tour member steps up, they are the person who is risking disciplinary action and litigation. Words don't really matter in this anymore, and only one date matters. We've talked a lot about the key dates that, in terms of deadlines for applications and tournament deadlines, only one date matters now, which is June 9th in London, and who puts a tee in the ground. Mm. Because the tee going in the ground is what will trigger disciplinary action at this point. And there's very little evidence to this point that there are a lot of players willing to be the players who will risk that kind of disciplinary action. The flip side of that is whether or not some players have actually signed contracts with the Saudis to play these events, in which case they are most likely to be the ones to trigger some kind of disciplinary action on the part of the PGA Tour, and then it gets kind of ugly and messy.
It's a very strong statement from the commissioner, from the PGA Tour. These decisions aren't made in a vacuum. I imagine there are several factors. Let me ask you this. I'm curious if the vision of Harold Varner III making that eagle putt at the Saudi International, which became such a big story because he hadn't won for such a long time, did the PGA Tour want to get out in front of any potential great moment at the Centurion Club in London, which would give fuel and legitimacy to the next year or years of LIV Golf?
I don't believe that was even a consideration because no one's going to see LIV Golf. I mean, it's on YouTube. That's the only place that this event is going to be offered other than the LIV Golf website. There is no audience for this, and there's no broadcast partner of any kind. So the idea that there could be any kind of seminal moment that would become a rallying cry around this tournament seems unlikely to have happened. What made the difference here is, as usual, Greg Norman's mouth. When Greg Norman announced that they were having 8 tournaments this year and 10 next year with a goal of 14 and the league after that, then from the PGA Tour standpoint, it ceased to become a one-off event in the way the Saudi International has been in the past. So they would no longer be granting waivers or conflicting event releases to a one-off money grab for players. They would be granting releases for players to begin this embryonic rival tour. And clearly the PGA Tour decided not to set any precedent of granting any releases for a LIV Golf event and draw the line in the sand now as opposed to several tournaments down the road.
Important that the PGA Tour protect the RBC Canadian Open. RBC is a robust sponsor of PGA Tour events, the RBC Heritage, the RBC Canadian Open. The RBC Canadian Open has not even taken place the last couple of years due to COVID-19. The RBC Canadian Open is opposite this London event on LIV Golf.
And AT&T was the sponsor of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, which was held opposite the Saudi event that 40 players from the PGA Tour went and competed at in February. So I'm sure that's a consideration. You hear that a lot from players, the need to protect the sponsors who are out there as much as any kind of, you know, dominance of the PGA Tour. But it's also worth noting, Damon, here, we hear a lot about what players and tour members have signed up for in terms of their membership. Every year, a PGA Tour player renews their membership, during which they sign on the dotted line that they accept tournament regulations of the PGA Tour. They renew that every single year, accepting the same thing. And they renew it every week when they enter a tournament on the PGA Tour. So folks that we've seen, like, you know, Sergio Garcia last week saying that he can't wait to be gone from this tour. Lee Westwood, who's playing on the PGA Tour this week, who has also suggested that he's interested in going to this offshoot tour. Every week they show up on the PGA Tour, they electronically accept the tournament regulations of the PGA Tour, except obviously when somebody offers them a big check.
Where is this headed, Amy? Because it seems like with the statement from the PGA Tour and the statement from Greg Norman calling this anti-fan, is this headed to the courts? Are folks lowering up at this point?
That seems inevitable. It's very unclear if LIV Golf, the Saudi-funded operation, has any standing to sue itself. The more likely outcome seems to be the possibility of a player becoming the plaintiff in this, because the player now has three options. They can observe the tournament regulation that was enforced yesterday. They can ignore it, defy it, and go to London and play. Or they can resign their tour membership and go to London and play. And the latter two options probably still set them up as a potential for being a litigant to try to determine whether or not the PGA Tour has the right to influence in any way the schedule that they're able to play. And that really goes to the heart of what this legal issue will be going forward. Lawyers are going to be licking their chops over this one, Damon.
You have said this story will continue to shadow the season, the spring and the summer, especially the major championship schedule as well. So for more on this developing story, let's welcome in Amy Rogers from TPC Craig Ranch.
Thanks, Damon. Well, word hadn't really gotten out when we were here on site last night, but news has certainly spread here today that the PGA Tour denied those requests for players to compete in the LIV Golf International Series first event in London with that memo going out to players here late last night. And PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan is here on site as well. So as players have learned of the news, they begin to share their thoughts and reactions to it, including Will Zalatoris, who had a unique perspective and shared his insights into the PGA Tour's decision when he met with the media earlier this morning.
I'm on the player advisory council, so we've had a lot of talks behind closed doors about it, and I think it's great. I mean, look, if you want to do it, no one's stopping you. But what we have here is pretty good, too, considering, you know, every week we're playing for a pretty great purse on pretty great golf courses, and considering the benefits that we have, you know, off the golf course on top of that, it's pretty tough to beat, and purses are only going up here, but on top of that, you know, like I said, no one's stopping anyone from doing it, but I think everyone agrees that, you know, this is the decision that came out yesterday is the best for the tour. You know, why would we, you know, you are obviously a part of this tour and the benefits that come with it, and no one's stopping you from doing it. But at the same time, you know, I thought that the decision was quite frankly, I thought that was the perfect response from the tour, because we're in a great place. The tour's in the best spot it's ever been. It's only going to get better. And, you know, why would we want to, you know, why would we encourage our players to get releases, you know, for those events when essentially, you know, we have all these sponsors that are involved, you know, with the tour and are only making it better and better. So, you know, we're trying to promote our best product possible. And if you want to be a part of this where it's only getting better and better, then, you know, you shouldn't have it both ways. You have a choice. I mean, you really do. You can go if you'd like, but, you know, it is what it is.
I haven't been able to talk to anybody else so far today. I mean, the news came out last night, and, you know, we had a busy night at our house last night, so I didn't even really see it till I was going to bed. And then I woke up this morning and did my pro-am, and now you just asked me, so I haven't really processed it very much. I guess first thoughts would be, I mean, I kind of figured that was something that would happen. I mean, if you're playing here on the PGA Tour, playing in something that could be a rival series to the PGA Tour, being a member of our tour, it's definitely not something where we want our membership to do, because it's going to harm, you know, the tournament that we have opposite that. And, you know, that's, I'm sure that's why they did not release the players, because if we have, you know, 15 guys go there and play, that, you know, that hurts RBC and the Canadian Open.
Lee Westwood is the only player in the field here this week who has publicly acknowledged that he did submit a request to compete in that LIV Golf event in June. I spoke to him earlier this morning, and he simply said he has already said enough on the subject and did not want to comment any further. Damon?
Amy Rogers at the AT&T, Byron Nelson. I tell you what, listening to Will Zalatoris, Amon, to me there seems to be a consistent theme from the PGA Tour members that are all in. Go! You know, things are great here. Go. We've got the best courses. We make a lot of money. We're playing for history. If you're going to go, go.
It really was noticeable there that you're looking at two of the up-and-coming bright stars in professional golf, the next generation of stars. And you can contrast that very easily with the generation that is intent on the LIV Golf Tour, which are, for the most part, guys whose best days are in the rearview mirror.
Right.
And what they're likely to accomplish in major championships from this point onwards is also probably greatly diminished. And I think when Zalatoris made an interesting point there, it's very easy to suggest that the tour has banned players from going there. They haven't. They're merely denying permission under their membership regulations. And as Zalatoris said, they can go. They're free to go. The question is, do they believe that they can then return to the PGA Tour and remain playing as active members as they were before? And that's clearly not going to happen. There are going to be consequences for players who choose to sign up for what is essentially a rival tour. And it would seem, between the comments we've seen in public there and certainly messages that I've had from players over the last day or two, that the decision Jay Monahan has made certainly seems to have the support of most of his membership.
It really does. So I guess the next question is, what changes the kind of unison that we're hearing from most of the PGA Tour members? Is it great events in the LIV Golf event series? Is it, you know, big-time purses and the, you know, jealousy? Is it bigger-name players deciding to go and having a great week or a great month and then reporting back to players on the fence that, hey, you know what, it isn't so bad over here either?
Jealousy is the chief strategy at this point, and Greg Norman has actually made that pretty explicit in his public comments, that his plan is to have these elite players who've said no, then sit and watch journeymen pick up $4 million checks at events and suddenly sit there and think, well, I can beat that guy. That money is mine. It should be coming to me. Mm. And we've even seen invitations extended to amateurs to go play these events as well. But it's all the same strategy, is to try to wear players down with essentially pure envy and say, this money is here for you, and hope that somehow that wears it down in tandem with litigation. But they have yet to find the plaintiff who's willing to step up on their behalf and do so. And that may not even happen immediately. A player might simply choose to resign his membership or take whatever punishment the PGA Tour initiates if they go play in London, because if it's Sergio, for example, he said he was done with this tour and he couldn't wait to get away from this tour. If they don't feel as though they have anything to lose, or they're not looking for a long-term relationship on the PGA Tour, then they may just go. But, you know, there's a lot of collateral damage here as well. There are a lot of major sponsors out there who are attached to a lot of these players, who are watching very carefully and aren't liking what they're seeing. They're just waiting to see what actually happens, what decisions are made by the people they're endorsing before they have to make a decision.
Still a lot of dominoes to fall, and that's just on this side of the Atlantic. There are also reports this morning that the DP World Tour had followed the PGA Tour in denying its members conflicting event releases to play in the first LIV Golf Invitational Series event. But the DP World Tour told Golf Channel it has not yet made a final decision, and the DP World Tour sent us a statement saying, quote, the respective deadlines for the members of the DP World Tour to request releases to play in the Asian Tour International Series event at Slaley Hall from June 2nd to 5th and the LIV Golf event at the Centurion Club from June 9th to 11th have both passed. As per the guidelines laid out in our members' regulations handbook, we are now currently evaluating each request on a case-by-case basis and will correspond our decision with each individual member in due course. So what does that mean? Because I guess the thought was that the PGA Tour and DP World Tour would be in lockstep. Has that changed?
I don't imagine it's going to change. Okay. I do think they are in lockstep. They just have different procedures, different deadlines for when verdicts have to be rendered. And it should be said that the DP World Tour's ability to discipline its members is not as stringent as PGA Tour regulations. But this causes an issue for a lot of organisations in golf, not least the USGA, because that event in London is held 1 week before the US Open at the Country Club in Brookline. So if action is taken against players who go tee it up in London and they are not members in good standing of either the DP World Tour or the PGA Tour, then the USGA faces a decision as to whether or not to allow them to compete in the Open. And I asked the USGA on the record a couple of weeks ago for a Golf Week column if a player who is under suspension or any kind of sanction from either tour would be allowed to compete in the Open. And their official response was they pride themselves on being an Open championship, but they reserve the right to take into consideration any suspensions or bans issued by any other tour. So the decision that Mike Wan and the USGA Championship Committee face in the coming weeks will be an interesting one as well.
A lot of decisions to make. Story continues to unfold. Also interesting to me that the PGA Tour and DP World Tour are now working together under the Strategic Alliance as well. So we're just getting started on this Wednesday when Golf Today returns. We're catching up with the number one player in the women's game, Jin Young Ko, looking for the three-peat this week at the Cognizant Founders Cup.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And by WinGrips, the best grips in golf.
Back on Golf Today this week, the LPGA Tour honors its own history at the Cognizant Founders Cup. Tournament honors the 13 original founders while showcasing some of the modern game's best talent. And this year, the event will be played at a new spot, Upper Montclair Country Club in Clifton, New Jersey. I've played it several times. It is tasty. Now, we've seen a familiar name win this event the last two times it was played. Flashback to 2019. Jin Young Ko won the event 22 under for the week, one shot ahead of Jessica Korda, Nelly Korda, Carlota Segonda, and Yu Liu. There was no event in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but then in 2021, Jin Young Ko finished off a wire-to-wire victory in the Cognizant Founders Cup with her 14th straight round in the 60s that matched a 16-year record held by Annika Sorenstam. She'll look for the three-peat this week in New Jersey. And the world number one joins us now. Jin Young Ko, you are going for three straight Founders Cup wins on a third different golf course. So what's the best part of your game right now? What are you most happy about?
My putting's well right now, so I'm happy to playing with this putter, new putter. So yeah, it does really well. So I'm happy to, I've got this putter.
Jin Young, we've heard a lot of talk over the last year about your record and then Nelly Korda's record and whether or not you two are rivals or will develop this great rivalry. Do you feel as though you benefit from a rivalry? Do you need somebody that you're rivals with in the game?
Well, I don't want to let up people's like pairing the rivals. There's this Nelly and me, because she's a great player, but this tour we have a lot of good players. So I don't think I have just one rivals. I have over 100 people's players rivals this tour. So yeah, I'm trying to best every single time. And Nelly's a good player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, no one's better than you right now. And being the best player in the game, it brings a lot of attention, interviews like this, newspapers following you. How do you handle so many people here and in Korea rooting for you and paying so much attention to you?
I want to say thanks, like U.S. fans and even Korean fans. But I don't care a lot of people talking about me. On the coast, if I make bogey, a lot of people, she makes bogey or doubles. I don't care. I don't want to care about it. I just want to think about myself, and I'm really happy to talking with my caddy on the coast. So yeah, I want to say thanks. A lot of people rooting me, but I don't want to think about bad words from the other people.
Well, luckily, you don't make too many bogeys these days, so you don't hear that very often. Jin Young, you won two major championships in 2019. How impatient are you to get major win number three?
Yeah, US Open is coming up and KPMG is coming up in summer. So I'm prepared to play two majors in the summer. And my game is very well right now, so I can't wait to play majors. If number three majors will, if I got US Open for number three, it's gonna be really great honor, but I will try to best.
Well, speaking of three, you were about 3 years old when Sayri Park won the 1998 US Women's Open. You turned pro in 2013 when Inbee Park won three majors. Who had the bigger influence on your golf career in your mind? Was it Sayri Park or Inbee, and why?
I would say both are amazing players. So they inspired from me like a lot of things. Inbee's, she has seven majors tournament win, and Sayri is amazing. So they are legend both. So yeah, it's hard to say it.
Well, two great legends to follow, and you're making your own footsteps in this game. But even the game's best want to get better. Tiger Woods wanted to get better. Annika Sorenstam wanted to get better. Where can you get better?
뭐라고 한 거야? 뭘 잘했으면 좋겠냐? I'm trying to get better than from me. Like, I want to try one more 114 holes, no bogey free round, or 60th round over 34 or 35. Yeah, I will try again.
You spend obviously a lot of time on the road, Jin Young Ko. I'm curious how you actually spend your time on the road. Yesterday you were in New York City. What did you do during the day?
I had great food in New York City, and I had ice cream all night, so it was fun.
I love this. We're going to call this Get to Know Number One. I have three boys. We eat ice cream a lot also as a family. Let's get to know you a little bit better. What is your favorite ice cream flavor, for example? What's your go-to, your number one ice cream?
Baskin Robbins.
Baskin in Robbins. Korea. In Korea.
In Korea, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, I like that.
There you go.
31 flavors. 31 bogey-free rounds in a row. Let's put the numbers together. How about your favorite food? What's your go-to food when you go to a big city like New York? Are you bulgogi, kalbi? What kind of food are you eating?
Pizza or pasta.
Pasta.
I'd go with that.
Okay, pasta.
What's your favorite city anywhere in the world?
I have two. One in Grand Rapids, one in New York City.
Oh, two great choices. How about your favorite Netflix show of all time? A pro golfer's got to watch a lot of TV. What's your favorite Netflix show of all time?
Michael Jordan, Last Game.
Say it again.
Michael Jordan, The Last Game.
Oh, well, yeah, Michael Jordan, Last Dance.
Last Dance.
I mean,
Last Dance.
A legend talking about a legend.
Game respects game.
Game recognized game. My day is made, by the way. Jin Young Ko, thank you so much. Best of luck as you go for the three-peat. A lot of threes. Jordan three-peated twice, by the way. So thanks for the time.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right. Kamsahamnida. Jin Young Ko, world number one. Bye-bye. Have a great week in New Jersey. So how about the odds for the Cognizant Founders Cup, powered by our buddies at PointsBet? There she is, Eamon, plus 500, Jin Young Ko. And then Lydia, not too far behind, plus 900.
Hard to bet against her.
Yeah, I tell you what, so fun to watch her play.
But from one number one to another number one. Coming up next, we'll hear from Masters champion Scotty Scheffler, who's making his first solo start since slipping into that green jacket. Stay with us.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
The eyes of Texas are upon TPC Craig Ranch, where some Lone Star State heroes, Scotty Scheffler and Jordan Spieth, compete in the tournament named after an all-time Texas great, Lord Byron Nelson. Some early and unfortunate news, though, this morning. Brooks Koepka has withdrawn from the AT&T Byron Nelson. A reason was not given. The last time the four-time major champ teed it up was at the Masters, where he failed to make it to the weekend. Still plenty of big names in the field this week. One of the stronger fields in recent AT&T Byron Nelson memory. Sam Burns going for a third. We look at Justin Leonard, our guy.
First tour start in 5 years, as he's getting ready for his Champions Tour debut next month.
On the cusp of age 50, JT, DJ, Hideki Matsuyama, a couple wins this season. Xander Schauffele got a win in the team event down in New Orleans. So parallel career paths for two of the Texans in the field this week, Jordan Spieth and Scotty Scheffler. In fact, in 2010, it was a 16-year-old Spieth who made his first start on the PGA Tour at the AT&T Byron Nelson, made the cut and finished in a tie for 16th, and the gallery really came out to support him. Spieth would go on to play college golf at the University of Texas, helped win that national title, getting the better of his pal Justin Thomas in the Alabama Crimson Tide in a memorable duel at Riviera back in 2012. And we all know what happened in 2015. Spieth won the Masters for his first of three majors. At the time, his 18-under par score tied Tiger's 1997 record, since bested by Dustin Johnson in 2020.
And 4 years after Jordan made his debut with Byron Nelson, 17-year-old Scotty Scheffler made his first tour start at the same event. He not only made the cut, he also made a hole-in-one that week, Damon, and ultimately finished in a tie for 22nd. Scheffler was also an All-American at the University of Texas and helped lead his team to a runner-up finish in the NCAA Championship. Then just last month, at the age of 25, he became a major champion, winning the Masters for the fourth victory in his last six starts. And that, Damon, is what you call Texas hot sauce.
Absolutely. The Longhorns are grouped together for the first two rounds alongside defending champ K.H. Lee, and they get their first round started tomorrow at 2:06 p.m. Eastern Time. You can watch it on Golf Channel. World number one caught up with our own Amy Rogers earlier today.
Scotty, making that first solo start since the Masters victory, how has life changed for you since getting that major win?
At home, not too much. At tournaments, it's a bit different now, but you know, at home, things haven't really changed too much, which is good.
Four wins and seven starts. Is this the best golf that you played in your career?
It certainly seems like it. I don't feel too different. I feel like I'm just kind of gradually improving, and right now I'm seeing some results, which is great. I'm definitely enjoying it a lot, but you know, I don't feel like a different person or a different player. I think right now I'm just, you know, kind of rolling. I'm really committed to my shots, and things are in a good spot for me.
You call this Dallas area home now. How is this week different, having a bit of a home game?
It's a little bit weird. It's kind of weird sleeping in my own bed and then coming out to a tournament and having all this stuff going on. I'm not really quite used to that, but it's definitely great to be able to sleep in my own bed for the week.
This week, I'm sure the purpose here is twofold. You certainly want to play well and give yourself a chance to win. But knowing that there is a major championship with the PGA Championship just next week, where are you focusing your energies?
Well, right now I'm focused on this week. I set up my schedule in a way where I can focus as hard as I need to focus on certain events. And I've had a bit of a break since the Masters. And so I've prepared to play this event and next week. But, you know, right now I'm focused here and focused on playing well in this event.
Well, thanks for the time. Have fun this week.
Of course. Thanks, Amy.
Same as he ever was. I don't feel like a different person. How cool is it to sit here on May 11th with this young stud and know that we are either going to have at the end of the year saying this was an incredible season, or it can be an historic season. It could be a Hogan-esque season, or a Jordan Spieth 2015, or a Tiger Choose Your Adventure, or a Vijay Singh in 2004. Where we sit right now, there's still so much of the season left, and he seems poised to continue this great run.
How much of an understatement is it to hear Scottie Scheffler stand there and say, I'm in a good spot right now, I'm
right?
just rolling.
Yeah.
There's a guy who seems supremely confident, and with good reason. And when you look at his numbers, he doesn't necessarily excel in any particular area of the game, perhaps from the neck up, but there are no strokes gained metrics for attitude, which he would probably do very well in. But look at his other strokes gained statistics. In strokes gained approach, he's top 30. He's top 30 strokes gained around the green. He's top 20 in putting. He's top 30 in tee to green. He's top 25 in driving distance. He's top 5 in scoring average. There is no discernible weakness anywhere in Scottie Scheffler's game. All it seemed to need was the confidence and belief. And he got that with that first win at the Waste Management Phoenix Open back in, at the end of January. And here we are now heading towards the PGA Championship. He's already got one major championship in the bag, and he's heading to a golf course on which he has won a big college event and says it's his favourite golf course. Of course he's in a good spot. Of course he's just rolling.
He's got a lot of fight. He's got a lot of grit. And I love his short game. I remember talking to John Fields at Texas, his coach there in Austin, and he talked about his short game, Scottie's, being equal to the best to have ever done it. And that was before he was chipping in at the match play. I kind of thought, oh, this is a little bit of hyperbole here, maybe. And then we're seeing him hole out. He doesn't miss a lot of greens, but when he does, he has that ability to hole bunker shots or hole pitches and chip shots. Much like Jordan Spieth, it is quite fun to watch this player navigate his way around a golf course, because all he cares about is getting the ball in the hole in the least amount of shots possible. It does not always look pretty, much like Jordan Spieth, but Scottie Scheffler finds a way to get it done, even if nothing jumps off the page.
And isn't it remarkable to watch how his focus is purely on what's going on inside the ropes? He's created this bubble around him. We saw that in the first segment of the show when he was talking about the denial of waivers for the event in London. It's as though he just became aware of it when he was going to bed. He didn't really process it before his press conference earlier. Scottie Scheffler doesn't waste time with distractions.
Yeah.
And this issue has been a distraction for a lot of people, you could argue. In some cases, you could argue it's showing up in their game. It's not showing up in Scottie Scheffler's game, because Scottie Scheffler stiff-armed this proposal from the get-go.
Yeah.
He's not interested in complicating his life outside of the ropes. He's got the team around him that keeps him kind of in the guardrails right there, so he can focus on the business at hand, and he's doing a pretty darn good job of focusing on that business.
It's a sweet spot right now. I do wonder how long can the good times last. I mean, in this year at the Masters, the story was Tiger Woods, and Scottie Scheffler was able to come in under the radar, his three previous wins notwithstanding. He can kind of...
You think he can't do that next week with Tiger and Phil and Rahm and Spieth? He may still be under the radar.
Maybe he can't. I just wonder, as time continues to go, and we've seen it with Jordan Spieth, and we've seen it with Rory McIlroy, those early years, the good times, life gets a little bit messy. Life gets a little bit complicated. Then all of a sudden you're asked week after week, hey, why didn't you win? He seems to have the personality to handle it all. I'm curious if you think so as well, because I don't think it's always going to be a honeymoon stage for him. At some point in professional sports, dealing with the likes of us and others, it's going to get a little dirty.
Yeah, whenever the slump comes and issues pop up in life and business and work and things like that, life does get complicated. So he's riding that sweet spot right now. But given what he said, and this question then I would have for you in response to that, given what he said on that Sunday morning at Augusta, how he had wept with his wife because he wasn't sure he was up to the moment, Is there any reason to think he will not be up to a moment that flying on in the radar is actually going to bother him going forward? Because I can't see a bigger moment that he's going to face in his career going forward than what he faced with that lead Sunday at Augusta.
It's a fair point you make. I guess the only hurdle potentially would be, can he do this year after year? That's not a question he has to answer on May 11, 2022. The great ones, pardon the pun, Wayne Gretzky, will tell you that the greatest of all time are determined by those who do it year after year after year. I've enjoyed watching Scottie Scheffler play golf. It will be more complicated as the years go on to see if he can do this year after year after year in this game, in this era of social media and Twitter. He may have woken up this morning and not been aware of the news with the PGA Tour and LIV. That's going to be a harder and harder bubble to be in the bigger you get. So while I'm enjoying watching him play, and this season has been great, I still think there's going to be some hurdles in any long career there are. That's what made Jordan Jordan and Brady Brady and Tiger Tiger, is they did it year after year despite scandal. In Michael Jordan's case, the gambling rumors or the dalliance with baseball. Yeah. Tiger, we've reported it on forever. So can Scottie Scheffler continue to do this year after year after year? Again, that's a long way down the road. I love watching him play now. I love the simplistic life he is living now, sleeping in his own bed, enjoying, you know, being the big name in a home event. I hope he can continue to bring it. And wow, the schedule lines up perfectly, including next week.
I was kind of amused to hear you refer to Scotty living in the bubble and how harder that gets.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go out on the range at a tour event. You can find a lot of players. Throw a stone and you'll hit a player who's still living in a bubble. And you don't have to aim carefully out there,
true.
Damon. But, he's like any other player. You get on a train like this, you're just going to ride it as long as it takes you. And, you know, it could upend and go off the rails at any point, but it doesn't show any signs of doing that right now. And with people in the game, you could always see with some guys there are external factors, whether it's the public scrutiny or the way they conduct themselves off the golf course. There are always, with a lot of guys, elements where you think that might be the kryptonite here. And we didn't see any of that with Jordan Spieth, other than the swing issues that eventually came up with him. But you don't see that with Scottie Scheffler either. They do seem to be kind of mirror images of each other in terms of their ability to tune out distractions on the other side of the ropes.
Seems very comfortable in his skin, very comfortable with his game, and very comfortable as the number one player in the world. Now, this is pretty cool, in case you missed it, this PGA Tour posting. Scottie Scheffler only has 14 more wins to go this year to catch Byron Nelson's single-season win. Lord Byron winning a record 18 times in 1945, including 11 straight. Good luck, Scotty. I mean, come on. Tiger was trying to chase that 11 straight, also didn't get there.
That's a pretty high bar to set.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up next, strong field outside of Dallas this week. When Golf Today returns, we're going to hear from the world number 8, Justin Thomas, ahead of his start at the AT&T, Byron Nelson. Back on Golf Today. It's been 5 years since Justin Thomas captured his only major title. He knows this, trying to change that. Got it done at the 2017 PGA at Quail Hollow. Parents were there. Great final round duel with Hideki Matsuyama. JT busy now prepping for next week's major. Posted this to Twitter on Monday. A little fun walk around Southern Hills today with Jordan Spieth. Course is awesome. Some nice PGA championship prep before next week. JT, the 2017 champ. Meanwhile, Spieth needs a PGA to complete the career Grand Slam. So how's JT done since winning that major, that PGA? Well, how about 9 wins, 43 top 10s, won that Players Championship, and then just one major top 5, though, since then, that 4th place at the 2020 Masters. So time now to meet the press, Justin Thomas style.
Yeah, the biggest decision for me was, same as always when I'm planning my schedule for the year is around the majors. And first off, I felt like taking 4 weeks off into a major wasn't a very smart idea. And with the Wells Fargo not being at Quail Hollow last week, I knew it wasn't going to play. And I personally just want to try something a little different this year. Wasn't going to play Valero before the Masters, but you know, these last 3 majors, so I'm going to see how I feel this week and potentially add Canada. But I just want to I want to play the week before and see how that feels and see how that gets going going into next week and seeing if that can lead to some success. So that was a massive part in me playing here. I played here in Q School 9 years ago, as crazy as it is to say, with Michael Greller on my bag. So, yeah, I mean, it hasn't changed. It's all right in front of you, you know, pretty big fairways and big greens and, you know, just all depends on the wind.
Okay, and you mentioned having not played since Hilton Head. You're making your 12th start this week, six of those top 10s and half of those top 5s. Just kind of assess the state of your game, how you're feeling as you're heading into the week.
Yeah, I mean, my game has been very, very solid this season, this year. I mean, it just hasn't necessarily produced any wins, which is, you know, what we play for, what I play for. So I would gladly trade, you know, a handful of those eights and tenths or, you know, 30s for a couple missed cuts and a couple wins, as much as it how great it is to be as consistent and be around there as much as I have, you know, come out here and play to win. So I'm getting close. I just got to stay patient and just let it come. I know that it will. It's just have to be in the right frame of mind for it, and hopefully we can get on a little run whenever it does happen.
JT looking to turn solid golf into some hardware, maybe this week in Dallas or next in Tulsa. Gets that first round underway tomorrow, 1:55 p.m. Eastern, alongside Sam Burns and Tom Hoagie. All right, folks, it's Founders Cup week on the LPGA Tour. We're catching up with one of the greatest, World Golf Hall of Fame member, Nancy Lopez, next on Golf Today.
After 2 years of rumors, speculation, and bluster, the red line has finally been drawn. The PGA Tour has denied permission for its members to play the first event in Greg Norman's Saudi-funded series of tournaments launching next month in Europe. We'll explain how we got here and what could happen next. And one of the all-time greats joins us, Nancy Lopez, a 48-time winner on the LPGA Tour, is coming right up as Golf Today continues.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
And the big news from yesterday, as the PGA Tour has denied its members conflicting event releases to play in the first LIV Golf Invitational Series event, which was scheduled to be contested in June outside of London. This statement from Greg Norman, the CEO and commissioner of LIV Golf: sadly, the PGA Tour seems intent on denying professional golfers their right to play golf, unless it's exclusively in a PGA Tour tournament. This is particularly disappointing in light of the tour's nonprofit status, where its mission is purportedly to promote the common interests of professional tournament golfers. Instead, the tour is intent on perpetuating its illegal monopoly of what should be a free and open market. The tour's action is anti-golfer, anti-fan, and anti-competitive. But no matter what obstacles the PGA Tour puts in our way, we will not be stopped. We will continue to give players options that promote the great game of golf globally. Now, moments ago, Justin Thomas was asked in the media center in Dallas about this latest development.
Justin, what was your reaction last night to the PGA Tour not granting releases, and do you think it will deter guys from going over there?
I mean, I'd hope it deterred them from going over there. It's, I think, you know, Jay's made it very clear from the start of what would happen, or you know, it's, I think a lot of people are probably like, I can't believe you did this, or wow, you went through with it. But I mean, this is what he said it was going to happen all along. And yeah, it's one of those things to where it just doesn't want the competing tour, the back and forth. You know, it's like, look, if you want to go. I mean, there's been plenty of guys that have been advocates of it and have just talked it up all the time, and they've been guys behind the scenes that are saying, I'm going, I'm doing this. And like, my whole thing is like, just go then. Like, stop going back and forth, or like, you say you're going to do this. It's like, you can do, everybody's entitled to do what they want. You know what I mean? Like, if I wanted to go play that tour, I could go play that tour, but I'm loyal to the PGA Tour, and I've said that, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for me to, I mean, break records, make history, do a lot of things in the PGA Tour I want to do. And, you know, there could be people that want to make that change. And it's like you're allowed to have that decision. You're a human being, and that's just a part of it. So, I mean, I don't think it was – I mean, maybe I'm sure there's a little bit of surprise, like, oh, wow, like, yeah, he really did it kind of thing. But, I mean, yeah, it was nothing off the beaten path that Jay didn't say he was going to do.
Welcome back inside our studio. Damon Hack and Eamon Lynch. The story continues to unfold. Justin Thomas, major champion, repeating his fealty to the PGA Tour. And I thought it was fascinating. He sounded very much like Will Zalatoris. If you want to go to this rival tour, go. I'm about making history here. I'm about chasing records here.
Yeah, there's a big gap between what Justin Thomas just said and what Will Zalatoris said before him and what Greg Norman has in his statement, which is because Greg Norman's statement is a willful falsehood on his part. He said that the PGA Tour is attempting to deny players the right to play golf unless it's exclusively in a PGA Tour event. That's demonstrably untrue. No one has been denied the right to play golf anywhere, and waivers have been given to guys to play events off of the PGA Tour in the past. There are umpteen dual members of the PGA Tour who also play the DP World Tour,
right,
or the Asian Tour or various other tours. Greg Norman's just unhappy that they're not being given the permission to go play his nascent startup league. And that's what's upsetting him. But what must be upsetting him even more is the players who are not on board with it. We just heard from the world number one, plus Justin Thomas and Will Zalatoris today. And you can draw up a long list of the other players who've told Greg Norman they're not interested, from Tiger to Rory to Brooks to DJ to Jordan Spieth. You know, there's a lot of guys who aren't interested. And I think that's probably what's upsetting Greg Norman more than anything else at this point. I mean, the language used in that statement of his is attempting to be lawyerly, but it's dime store lawyer stuff, this idea that it's anti-competitive. Well, every business has also got the right to protect its own assets and to avoid confusion among consumers in the marketplace as to which tour a player actually plays on. So there's, while I've talked to antitrust lawyers about this at length, you could certainly make a case from, and Greg Norman's crew will make a case, that there is an antitrust argument to be fought here. But there are antitrust lawyers will tell you that there is also a pretty stout defence that the PGA Tour could mount here as well. It's not a cut and dried case by any means. But right now, Greg's, I think, in an ego hurt phase right now, and it's going to be interesting to see which players are willing to cross the line to be there on the first tee when you get to London on June 9th and set themselves up to be in some way the plaintiffs for a case and frankly the willing stooges for sports washing.
So far we're hearing, you know, reports in sound from players of a certain stripe, you know, the players in their
20s. Those who still have a career ahead of them.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, it's like 20-somethings who grew up in the era of Tiger Woods and seeing him chase history on the PGA Tour and chase major championships versus Lee Westwood versus Sergio caught on a hot mic saying can't wait to leave this tour. It's like the 20-somethings versus the 40-somethings. Do you expect that to continue since this latest development, or will that line be even more stark now between those who are going to risk alienating the PGA Tour at a minimum and risk not having a place to play at maximum?
In terms of brand names, I would expect it to remain the guys north of 40. And I swapped messages with one player last night who was very upfront. He said, you know, my competitive runway ahead of me on the PGA Tour is pretty limited. I would have to fight and scrape for every dime that I could make on tour in the next few years. And so when someone offers me this, then there's a chance to leave the game on my terms. I can get that. It's the hard economics of this game. But the same player admitted that he wouldn't be proud of this decision and he'd be aware of being a pariah because of where the money is coming from and the purposes that this league exists for, which is to distract from human rights abuses. So players are conscious and very much cognizant of what underpins this league. So they know that there's no coming back. And that's really the key point here. Justin Thomas said the same thing Will Zalatoris said. If you want to go, go.
Yeah.
The idea that you can have a revolving door and go play a rival league and then come back on the same terms, that's what the guys are saying that the revolving door is being locked. You can make your choice. You're on one side of it or the other, but you can't be on both.
Conventional wisdom for months has been that the tour would grant releases for the event in London. And now it is saying no, not even letting it be one event overseas. We know that it was going to happen in Portland.
Yeah.
What does this tell you about the PGA Tour's stance and belief that this threat is not just existential, but real?
It changed whenever the Saudi schedule was published. Whenever Greg Norman announced that they were doing 8 events this year and 10 events next year, right, and then he announced 14 events in 2024 with the goal of launching his rival league in full that year, then this ceases to be, the LIV Golf Series ceases to be a one-off tournament, the way we've seen players go over the years, go play in Singapore or Australia or in Middle East.
Right.
And even play the Saudi International back in February. Those were all one-off tournaments for which a conflicting event release met the established precedent. But clearly the tour has decided not to establish a precedent at any point for the LIV Golf Series, because it is a series rather than a one-off event. So they're drawing the line in the sand very early, and I expect that's what's going to be litigated going forward.
Story that continues to evolve, and while there is some turbulence in the men's game, this is a special week for the LPGA as the tour honors its own history at the Cognizant Founders Cup, a tournament honors the tour's 13 original founders while showcasing some of the modern game's best talent. One of the best to ever do it? Nancy Lopez, pioneer in the game, 48 career wins, 3 majors, 4-time Rolex Player of the Year, Victoria Solheim Cup captain as well. The list goes on and on. Lopez inducted into the Hall of Fame back in 1987. Now, earlier this year, we lost one of the original founders, Shirley Spork. Now, tomorrow, Nancy Lopez will hit the ceremonial tee shot in honor of the late founder, and very appropriate, as Shirley thought the world of Nancy Lopez.
You're known by people that never have played, never will play golf, but they've seen you on television and they've read about you, and that's something that's so dear to people, that they admire what you do and how you got where you are. You know, that's a lot of difference.
Thank you.
And when Arnold came in the room, you know, in the Bob Hope Classic, I followed every step he ever made, and when he came in the room, he worked the room. Yeah, he really talked to everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. Everybody loved Arnie. And everybody loves Nancy.
Well,
you know, that's
sweet.
It's important.
You,
that's very important.
And the Hall of Famer Nancy Lopez joins us now. Nancy, we appreciate you coming on. The LPGA founders have meant so much to this game and to you. How nice was it that before her passing, Shirley knew she would be inducted into the LPGA Hall of Fame?
It was very important. You know, Shirley was very special to all of us, and we're missing her this week. And I didn't realize that they caught her talking to me on the pedestal there last year. And she was just really a special lady. Lot of knowledge, a lot of great stories, and it really touched my heart to be able to see that.
Nancy, you're going to hit the ceremonial tee shot tomorrow that's going to honor Shirley Spork. What would you want the kids that are coming up on the tour now, or even kids getting into this game, what would you want them to know about what Shirley Spork and the other founders meant to this game and this tour?
Well, Shirley stood for all that golf embodies, you know, the great spirit of going out there and being a good sport, playing the game, enjoying it, loving golf the way that she did, love teaching as she did in her later years. But, you know, just the person that she was, class and quality, that represented the LPGA Tour and this game the way it should be represented. And for all those little kids out there, they need to learn more about Shirley Spork and really see what a special lady she was. And as my husband tells a lot of people, Google her, so they need to do that.
I love that. Nancy, this is such a big part of the season on the LPGA, including this important event, plus some majors coming up. What do you enjoy the most about being around modern players today, talking shop and mixing it up?
You know, it's fun to be out here and see all these great players. You know, they represent the LPGA Tour and they work very hard to be the best of the best. And, you know, I think as I get older, I'm always saying, God, I wish I could still be out there playing and seeing how my game would hold up against some of these great players, because I'm still very competitive no matter what I'm doing. If I'm playing with my husband or friends, I want to win and beat them, but have fun doing it. And I think coming out here to watch the LPGA Tour and these great players, and a lot of players that I still know, a lot of new players that I don't know, and it's kind of fun to be able to meet them and maybe get to know them. But it's special for me when the players come up and go out of their way to say hi to me, and it makes me feel very, very honored, because they're these great players that play this great game. And so it's fun to be out here. It's fun to be out here when I really miss the LPGA Tour. I wish that I didn't ever get old and I could still play, because it was a special time in my life, and all these players are like family to me. And of course, LPGA officials and the people that are still out here. It was just special times for me for all the years I played on the LPGA Tour.
One of the most special times in your career, Nancy, started 44 years ago this week. It was the first of the five straight victories you had in 1978. Now, Annika did that with a couple of tournaments at the end of 04 and then a few at the start of 05. But you're the only one who's ever done it in one season, in 1 year. Do you think that record will ever be broken?
I hope not. I think whenever you hold a record, you don't really root against somebody not to beat you, but you want to hold on to something. And that's the only one I'm holding on to right now. So I don't know if anybody will ever do that. Of course, it is Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, and Vair Trophy winner. And sometimes they leave the Vair Trophy off once in a while. So it'll be hard to beat. And I hope I can hold that for a long, long time.
Well, Nancy, you played in such a great era of rivalries. Pat Bradley, Patty Sheehan, Beth Daniel, just to name a few. Jin Young Ko told us earlier she's kind of absent of a consistent rival with Nelly injured. That she says there's 100 rivals that she's trying to hold off. Did rivals push you, keep you up at night, keep you sharp?
Absolutely. I know when I was paired with Bradley or Sheehan or Carner, those great players, I knew I was going to have my best game on that Sunday. Because they brought their best game and they wanted to beat me and I wanted to beat them. And it was a friendly rivalry out there, a lot of fun. And it did kind of get you ready and geared up to go out on that Sunday and try and win the tournament, especially when you could beat so many great players. That's what it was all about. It wasn't about being the only player out there and winning, but to be able to play against so many great players. And when you beat all of them, then you really did very well.
And Nancy, you said you're still extremely competitive, and we know we haven't seen you in any of the senior tournaments in the last few years with knee surgeries. Is there any chance we're going to see you at the U.S. Senior Women's Open at the NCR Club in Ohio this year?
I would love to be there. I might be there just to hang out a little bit for a few days. But, I have two brand new knees. But now that the pain of my knees has gone away, my feet are killing me. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. I'm going to have surgery on my feet eventually. I can walk about 12 holes, and then it just really painful. So I don't know what I'm going to do in the next years. Maybe if I can get surgery on my feet or find out what I can do to make it more comfortable, I might be able to try that, because I've been playing a lot and I'm kind of really playing pretty good. So I don't hit as long as I used to, but I'm still pretty consistent and my short game's still good. So I'd like to be able to go and have a good golf game. I don't want to just go just to play.
Well, Nancy, I miss seeing that syrupy language swing, one of my favorites in the game. It's great to spend some time with you. Have a great time in New Jersey.
Thank you. Thanks so much. We will.
All right, World Golf Hall of Fame member Nancy Lopez. And during this Founders Cup week, we remember the life of Shirley Spork. On Golf Today, we take a look at the PGA Tour University Velocity Global Ranking. Top five players in the final standings receive Korn Ferry Tour membership and will be exempt into all open full field events beginning the week following the conclusion of the NCAA Championship through the end of the KFT regular season. These players, known as the PGA Tour University First Team, I love that, will also be exempt into the final stage of that year's Korn Ferry Tour qualifying tournament. Now, the players who finish between 6th and 15th on the final standings will earn membership on a PGA Tour-affiliated international tour and be exempt into all open full field events beginning the week following the conclusion of the NCAA Championship through the end of the current season. Now, just last month, Oklahoma took down Oklahoma State and Texas. You want to talk about beating some rivals on their way to a Big 12 championship title. It's Oklahoma's second Big 12 championship under head coach Ryan Hibble, and Oklahoma had four players finish inside the top 11, one of those being Chris Goddard. Take a look at this tweet. Yeah, the national championship runs through Norman, baby. Oklahoma is the number one overall seed for NCAAs. We'll host our regional at Jimmy Austin OU Golf Club May 16th through the 18th. And Chris Goddrup joins us right now. Chris, great to see you. Having this pathway to the pro ranks via the Velocity Global Ranking, how much has it been on your mind this season?
Well, first off, thanks for having me. And it's been fun. You know, I learned a lot from the guys beforehand who, you know, you got Quade and you got JB and Reband who came before me. And, you know, they did a great job. And I've learned to just kind of push it on the back burner, focus on the game. And it's been fun so far this year.
Chris, you were one of the top individual golfers in the country when you were at Rutgers before you transferred to OU. What was behind your decision to transfer, and did you have any trepidation about moving into that program?
Yeah, it was a tough decision, but, you know, with the extra year we were given with the COVID cancellation, I kind of thought I was going to challenge myself and go somewhere different. You know, me being from New Jersey, I wanted to go somewhere far away. I know if I'm going to play pro golf, I'm going to need to be able to travel and play golf all over the country. So it was a tough decision, but, you know, I think looking back on it, it was a great decision for me.
What's it like going to school in Norman? I went to Norman years ago, did a cover story on Sam Bradford for Sports Illustrated magazine. I thought Norman was kind of sneaky cool, put it up with a Westwood or an Austin. Your thoughts on Norman?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's definitely different from what I'm used to back in New Jersey, but you know, the fans here are diehard for every single team that we have. And, you know, we have a lot of really good teams here at school. So we just keep feeding off each other's energy. And it's been an awesome year. And hopefully we're not done yet.
Well, Chris, I read a story recently on Yahoo about your college coach, Ryan Hibble, how competitive he is. How would you describe his leadership style?
I would say he's more of a football coach that coaches golf and happens to be pretty good at golf himself, too. So, you know, we're competing every day. There's no real day off for us, whether it's the weight room or on the course. You know, we're trying to beat each other, and we get pretty pissed off if someone on our team beats us too. So it creates a little fire on the team, and it's been really helpful to keep pushing us forward this year.
Chris, last week you made it through to sectional qualifying for the U.S. Open. You played at Hollywood Golf Club, a great little course in Deal, New Jersey. Only three guys finished under par that day. You shot 64 and were the medalist. What was it like playing a kind of home game to try to qualify for a major, and where are you going to play the next round of qualifying?
Yeah, I saw that on the sectional list right when I signed up, and I knew I was going to go home and play for it at Hollywood. So I played there a bunch, and it was kind of nice to go home and kind of recharge my batteries a little bit and then play a nice round at Hollywood too, which was a nice bonus. And then I'm going to play up in New York at Century and Old Oaks, which I played in last year. So I know the courses pretty well, and I think they suit my game nicely.
Fantastic golf courses in the Northeast, as you know, but also getting some wins in Norman. You guys use that number 14 on all your social media after victories. What does that 14 mean to you guys?
It means a lot for us because Brentley, one of your fellow coworkers, you know, he dinged us with the 14 overall team to start the year, and we knew that that was wrong. So we've just been using it as fire all year, and he keeps doubling down on his picks, but we keep trying to prove him wrong. So until we're proven wrong, we're going to keep using it as a little fuel.
So this was like Nicklaus in 86 at the Masters reading the newspaper article. You guys got fired up because Brently Romine slotted you at 14.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how about that?
You got to find the inspiration wherever it comes from.
Whatever it takes, put the chip on the shoulder and get it done. Hey, best luck the rest of the season. It's been fun watching you guys play some golf, and we'll speak to you soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, Chris Goddrup on this Wednesday. Now, coming up next, some more in this unfolding story between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. More comments from the World Golf Hall of Famer Greg Norman next.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And introducing the Cobra King Forge Tech Irons, a better player's iron. And by Skechers Go Golf, comfort-driven styles worn by Brooke Henderson.
Back on Golf Today, remind you of the breaking news from yesterday as the PGA Tour has denied its members conflicting event releases to play in the first LIV Golf Invitational Series event, which is scheduled to be contested in June outside of London, England. Earlier today, the CEO of LIV Golf, Greg Norman, was asked if he had a legal team in place in response to the tour's decision, and this is what he had to say. We're going to back up the players. We're going to be there for them. For whatever that is, we're ready to go. We don't want to go, but we're ready to go. It will be the player's choice. I'm not going to begrudge any player who makes a decision to play wherever he wants. We're giving them the ability because we believe LIV is here for a long period of time. If you want to go exclusively to the PGA Tour, happy days, go do it. I guarantee that a lot of people will come eventually to play with LIV Golf. I've said to the players, we've got your back. Simple as that. We will defend, we will reimburse, and we will represent. So more words.
It's got to be
CEO.
It's got to be sobering for any player thinking of crossing this line when Greg Norman tells them he wants to be their closer in the courtroom. Mm. Because this is where the rubber really meets the road now, because players are essentially making a decision to become the poster boy plaintiff in this case. And in the player's mind, it might simply be the issue of determining what their right is to play and where they have that right to play. But it's not quite as simple as that. There are a lot of layers to this story, and they're going to be the poster child for MBS and sports washing. They're going to be standing in a courtroom and in the court of public opinion, making the argument for their freedom of choice while being financed by somebody who chops up his critics. That's a pretty tough sell in any rational argument.
Greg Norman has been smarting for a world league since the 1990s. It was denied. Mm-hmm. PGA Tour, you know, collaborated, worked with other world tours to create the World Golf Championships. And now he has money, deep pockets. How much do you sense that he is willing to go to the mattresses at this point and battle the PGA Tour tooth and nail, as he said, for whatever it takes, for as long as it takes?
Well, Greg will do it because for as long as it takes, because Greg doesn't have any other options, and it's not Greg's money. So he's quite freely happy to spend that money, and he announced yesterday he's gotten an extra $2 billion from the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. In an interview with Sky Sports yesterday, he quite strenuously insisted that he does not answer to MBS and MBS is not his boss.
Yes.
The Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia is the sole financier of this series. It has one chairman, and the Wall Street Journal has described it as the least transparent sovereign wealth fund in the world, and it is organized and run by one man, which is MBS. So it might come as news to MBS that Greg Norman doesn't think he actually works for him. But Greg has been motivated by this animus against the PGA Tour for almost 30 years at this point, since his world tour dissolved. And if anyone cares to go back and read the details of what happened, Tim Fincham at the time saved Greg Norman's embarrassment, because it was an even more bumbling effort then than it is this time around. The money here is just a little bit darker and comes with a lot more baggage than it used to.
To that point, is that why players are tiptoeing? No one really has stood up to the plate, chest out, chin high, saying, I'm going to do this, save Robert Garrigus. But it still seems like the players that are on the fence, and from your conversations with players and even from hearing Justin Thomas earlier today, it sounds like some players are still kind of like, they're not really leaning into this venture.
A lot of players will want the money, who realize that the competitive career they have ahead of them on the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour isn't that good, isn't going to be that lucrative. They don't play well enough consistently to benefit from the higher purses, or they're not sufficiently well-liked to generate money from the Player Impact Program about fan engagement. So the money that's out there or being pumped into the game might not necessarily come to them. So you can see why there is the appeal of the easy money.
Yeah.
And very lucrative money from these $25 million purses. But it's now getting to the point where it's not simply about, are you making the decision to go chase this money? It's, are you willing to defy the regulations you signed up to and become the public face of Greg Norman's long simmering grudge against golf officialdom everywhere? Because that's the choice players now face, is, are you willing to be the public face and defy the rules that you signed up to? to join on to this lawsuit, which on the face of it will seem kind of preposterous to a lot of people. I mean, it's like, you know, suing McDonald's because you want to be able to buy Burger King going through the same drive-through. It's, you know, there is not a revolving door here, and it's a legal argument can be certainly made on either side of it in terms of player control versus the tour's right to protect its assets. But it's going to get ugly, and right now, to this point, we haven't seen a player step up and say, I'm willing to be the poster child for that. Maybe it's Phil Mickelson, maybe it's Lee Westwood. They've all talked about the appeal of the money and setting their own schedule. This is where the choice has consequences now.
How much does this shadow the PGA Championship next week in Tulsa?
I think a lot of players will be asked about it. It was going to be more of an issue when the deadline for Portland was going to fall, that for players to apply for waivers. That's kind of off the table right now. The line has been drawn before that.
A story that continues to evolve minute by minute, it seems. Golf Central at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great Wednesday.